Hey, you're listening to No Scrubs, a student-led medical podcast. My name's Anthony.
My name is Natalie. Welcome to our first episode. As part of our collaboration with Pathos, with the Pathos event, we will be talking about how genomics play an important role in the future of lupus diagnosis and treatment.
So today we're here with Dr. Amory Grammer and Ms. Christine von Raesfeld. Dr. Grammer is an internationally recognized scientist and successful entrepreneur. She has over 20 years of experience in genomics and managed a highly productive NIH laboratory before co-founding Ample Biosolutions.
Christine von Raesfeld is the founder and CEO of People with Empathy. She's a leader in bringing critically needed patient perspective to cutting-edge medical innovations. Christine is committed to providing patients with chronic and rare diseases the medical and professional support they need.
It's great. Thank you both for being here with us today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you, Anthony.
So to get started, we're going to talk a little bit more about the great cutting-edge research that's going on in precision medicine. But before going there, Dr. Grammer, could you take us back to what inspired you to becoming an immunologist?
Sure thing. So I've always had a curiosity in the natural world back to my earliest memories. And I was lucky enough to have mentors all throughout my education, as early as elementary school, all the way through high school and college, that really stimulated my mind and allowed me to see outside the traditional silos of science, which at the time when I went to college in the 80s was biology, chemistry, and physics. So I went to the University of Virginia, got a BS in chemistry, same program as our NIH director, Francis Collins. He's actually a Virginian. And then embarked on a graduate school career, first to examine signaling pathways so that you could target that with drugs, and then was very interested in systems biology, and immunology is a critical system of your entire health. Because if your immune system isn't working well enough, you have immunodeficiency, or you get repeated infections. If your immune system is working abnormally, you get autoimmune diseases like lupus that I've dedicated a lot of my life to. So I would say it was a meandering walk, and I would encourage all of our listeners, always keep your eyes open, experience conversations with others, and pursue your own path.
That's great. Natalie, would you like to go now?
Sure. Similarly, we wanted to ask Christine, what inspired you to get involved in patient advocacy?
So for me, it's a little bit different of a story than Amory. I didn't have the mentors and I wasn't a science or even a student person. I've been sick most of my life. But my ties to advocacy really came when I was looking for purpose and really just looking for connection. And also, I haven't been heard in the medical system. I do have lupus, which is, we'll find out later, is a series of criteria to diagnose. And just with that diagnosis, just came across a lot of problems and really discovered precision medicine and personalized medicine as a way for me to really improve my own situation. So I'm really just happy to be here and happy that Amory is on with us because she is an amazing person doing some great things within the lupus space and with gene expression. And Anthony, I think that kind of leads us into, can Amory tell us a little bit about what she's doing and the space that she's in?
Well, thank you, Christine. When I got my PhD in immunology, just to kind of pick up on Anthony's question, I was fortunate enough to get a job at the National Institutes of Health in Bethesda, Maryland. Incredible place. It's a city of scientists and physicians and patients interacting in a wonderful triangle. So I was there in the 2000s, which was very exciting. This is when the human genome was being sequenced. So if you think back before then, we understood that there was genetics, which is what you're born with. And we understood that that gave rise to messenger RNA, which are gene expression, genes being turned on and off like light switches. And we know now that there are 20,000 genes in every cell of your body. It was really unclear in 2000 how many there were. And certainly we only knew about 20% of what they were. So during my time there, I was very lucky to encounter a number of mentors and learned how to assay gene expression. I was doing that in the autoimmune disease lupus, comparing that with normal individuals, as well as those with immunodeficiency. I had an idea back then, which is what my company Ample Biosolutions is doing now, which was to be able to take all that information, develop tools to be able to reach in, say, what cells are the players? What are those cells doing? What pathways could be targeted by drugs? And reducing that hundreds of millions of data points to actionable insights that doctors and patients could use. The technology wasn't available in the 2000s. The computer power, the ability to do big data, data science techniques, machine learning, all these things didn't really exist now. And all this leads to the platform that Ample's developed that allows us to truly do personalized precision medicine.
Thank you very much, Dr. Grammer. Before we get into more of the specifics of what Ample is working on currently, could you and Christine please talk about why it's so currently difficult to diagnose people with lupus?
So I'll go first, Christine, if you don't mind. From a scientific standpoint, I'm a PhD, but Ample's co-founder, my colleague of 30 years, Dr. Peter Lipsky, is a world-renowned rheumatologist and physician scientist. Rheumatologists are the doctors that take care of lupus patients. So up to this point in time, diagnosing lupus can be a years-long process, and it's through a variety of criteria. And this has really put an urgency to figuring out better ways to manage lupus once it's diagnosed. And that's the blood test that Ample is expecting to bring to the market in about a year. Lugene, a disease management tool for lupus patients to predict flares, monitor disease status, and best drug options. The platform, the bioinformatic tools, and the machine learning algorithms that are proprietary and that we've developed are actually applicable to all disease. And just in the last year, we've confirmed both in cancer and infectious disease in COVID. In fact, my business partner, Dr. Lipsky, just wrapped up a talk on our COVID findings with other prominent NIH scientists just this afternoon.
So do you want me to tell you my side of the lupus diagnosis part? So for me as a patient, I've been sick all my life, like I said. And as I was going further into, you know, my life, more and more symptoms would pop up. And so it took years to get a lupus diagnosis for me. I was originally, a thought was given that I might have lupus at the age of 14, and the physician on duty dismissed that as something that was going on with another condition. And so it was a series of criteria. At one point, I finally met all 11 criteria for lupus, but it did take me about 14 years to get an official diagnosis for lupus. And we're still fighting with the diagnosis because it is such a difficult diagnosis to get to. There isn't a single diagnostic test, which hopefully AMRI will change that. But with lupus, and it really is kind of a mishmash, and people don't understand how to explain their symptoms to physicians, and it just leads to a lot of confusion. So really just a difficult illness to diagnose, and one that a lot of these symptoms are passed off as other things. You know, so if you have joint pains, that may not necessarily be lupus. It could just be you're tired. And we do see that with some physicians with dismissal of symptoms. And so really, we are looking for something and technologically to really help advance the diagnosis process.
And Anthony, if I could just do a quick follow-up to that. I think Christine painted a very accurate picture of the journey and the criteria that need to be achieved to get a lupus diagnosis now. As she hinted at, Ample Biosolutions has a series of products we're bringing to the market. The first one we expect in about a year, Lugene Manage, to manage disease and to get the right drug to the right patient at the right time. But our second product, and I'll just give a little preview here, it's called Lugene Diagnose or Lugene DX, that will combine genetics, which you're born with, which can't be changed, along with the gene expression, to bring a blood test that will be a yes or no diagnostic for lupus. And we're very excited about that series of products and working with all of the patient groups, physician groups, and scientists around the world to bring that to fruition.
And I'm excited about that too, Amrie.
Thank you, Christine.
I think you will make the lives of so many people easier, and just the quality of life can improve for so many people globally with what you're doing. So I appreciate the work that you've put into it.
Thank you.
Kind of stemming from talking about treatments and stuff, do you guys have an answer for why it takes so long for lupus treatments to be developed? Like, for example, the Benlysta was the first lupus-specific drug approved by the FDA in over 50 years. Is there a reason as to why it takes so long?
So, Christine, maybe I can jump in on that first, if that's all right.
Please do, yes.
So, developing drugs for lupus is difficult for the same reason of why a Lugene managed test is needed by patients. And the reason why is that there were a variety of genetic inheritability, as well as environmental exposure that can lead to expression of different genes that all come together to give the outward face of lupus, but the disease can be driven by a variety of different immunological and pharmacological signaling pathways. So there are many groups of lupus patients, and one group, Benlysta may work really well for that group. Another group may respond to a different drug. That gets to the heart of why a test like Lugene Manage is very necessary, because if done on a routine basis, you can see patterns and see what drugs would be right for a patient at this moment in time. So to get back to the heart of your question, so why did it take Benlysta so long to come to the market? But the flip side of that, why are there so many promising lupus clinical trials that have, quote, officially failed, even though physicians know that they work for a subset of lupus patients? That because in the current clinical trial screening, there's no way to know for sure that a particular patient has the pathway for the drug being tested. And so AMPL has utilized its genomic platform, bioinformatic tools, and machine learning algorithms to have a prototype Lugene test. And we now have contracts with 10 pharma and biotech companies to assist with the whole range of drug development activities, everything from preclinical mouse models and credentialing of potential compounds to go into the drug development pipeline, all the way through to analyzing trials that haven't gone so well and being able to elucidate what are the characteristics of the patients that did respond to the drug, leading to real-time patient stratification, patient enrichment, patient selection during the enrollment period of a clinical trial. So this is all very promising, and why AMPL Biosolutions, our genomic platform, bioinformatic tools, machine learning algorithms, and the subsequent blood tests like Lugene Manage are so important, not only for the clinical trial platform, but also as a disease management tool.
And now can I step in and give you my opinion too? And Amrie, it hit spot on with most of these things. And I wanted to thank you for bringing up the issue with the meds, because with lupus patient, we like to tell lupus patients that what works for you may not work for someone else. And for me, I was one of those people. And according to, I've had a pharmacogenomics test, which showed me how I metabolize drugs. And I found that I don't metabolize drugs in the right way. And so that's a huge point that really needs to be addressed, and how you metabolize different drugs. And in the lupus patients, with not knowing where these diseases have come from or what's causing them, it's hard to determine. But I wanted to touch really quick too on the clinical trials is you have a condition here that's lupus, and you have a multitude of people who have other conditions and comorbidities that go with lupus, which then restricts them from a lot of clinical trials. So you've got inclusions and exclusions that go along with clinical trials that may keep people out of it. But you also have a hugely minority population with lupus patients who are mistrusting of the entire clinical trial process. So again, that's another space with the lupus community that really needs to be explored is clinical trials, what they are, how they can help you, instead of really being this last ditch option for them to save themselves. So I really appreciate the forward thinking that Amri and the team at Ample is doing, because they're looking at solutions and not looking to just put a Band-Aid on what's happening.
Thank you very much for that. And to build off of how lupus affects very many different groups of patients, why is it that most people with lupus are women of childbearing age?
Christine, maybe I can jump in first on that question.
I don't even know the answer to that one, Amri, so you go for it.
So this all goes back to what I was talking about in the beginning, that genetics is what we're born with. That can't be changed. And then gene expression is what is driving what's going on in every cell of your body at every moment in time. So about 95% of lupus patients are women, although men do get lupus, and often it's a much more severe disease. There are a number of genes that are on the X chromosome that have been shown definitively to be inherited genetic susceptibility loci for lupus that are driving. And a lot of those genes, if you just think about human progression, come on board when people go through puberty. So when women go through puberty, there are a number of hormonal changes that come about that are driven by the X chromosome. And this is the earliest time that lupus in the adult form is seen. I should note there is a pediatric form of lupus that Dr. Virginia Pascal and others do work on. It's a very different genetic signature.
All right, that's great. Natalie, I think you have a question that you'd like to ask as well.
Yeah, so looking into previous research, we learned that SLE, systematic lupus erythematosus, is characterized by the dysfunction of both the innate and adaptive immune system, which thus results in the production of autoantibodies. Could you guys further explain the abnormalities found within B cells in people with SLE?
Sure. So SLE, systemic lupus erythematosus, and there's an interesting vignette. Lupus, think about what just comes to mind, wolf. So why is this disease called lupus? In the Middle Ages, the characteristic rash that was seen was lupus looked very familiar to physicians that saw infected wolf bites. So it's just a little interesting piece of trivia. Systemic, because lupus can affect one or all organ systems of the body. The ones that we hear about most often are, for example, kidney. Selena Gomez did a good job of spreading the word about awareness about lupus with her own disease and when she had a kidney transplant. But the disease can affect any organ system. And the most obvious one to the outside world is the characteristic butterfly rash that is often the first thing that is noticed about lupus. So getting back to your question, and what are the immunological characteristics? So we talked about genetics. There are genetic drivers that people are born with that are driving abnormalities in all aspects of the immune system. One of the first that is observed is the innate immune system. So I talk about these are the garbage collector cells, the macrophages, the dendritic cells that are going around the body, basically ingesting material, chopping it up, putting it on its surface in the context of MHC, to say, this is just you, no problem. This is an invader. Let's go for the attack. But the problem is people that have a genetic susceptibility to lupus, the body doesn't recognize that properly and starts going after the antigens, which are the pieces of chopped up material that actually come from their own self. So what happens is with exposure over time, a lupus patient's immune system responds a little bit higher. Think of it as a jumper. Jumps a little higher and never rests down to the ground again. So with every infection, every environmental exposure, you get a higher and higher immune response till basically you go over the edge of the roller coaster, and that is what emerges as lupus. The adaptive immune system, as I talked about, is chopping up little pieces of things, presenting them to T cells in the context of what we call MHC. You can imagine a hot dog bun with the pieces of what's being chopped up as a hot dog, the antigen. And that's stimulating very specific T cells that recognize that little piece. And then we talk about cognate interactions. This is T cells now stimulating B cells that recognize that same antigen, but in a three-dimensional shape. So the T cells recognize the hot dog in the bun, the chopped up piece, the antigen and MHC, whereas B cells recognize the three-dimensional whole antigen. And this is why what B cells make, those antibodies, are so effective at clearing antigens in a normal situation like infection, but can be drivers of immense inflammation and autoimmunity when they're abnormally recognizing self. And the most common autoantibody that we hear about and is a clinical blood test used all the time with lupus is anti-double-stranded DNA. All of this in toto, the antibody hooked onto the antigen, the anti-double-stranded DNA antibody binding the DNA attracts something called complement, which allows it to be processed and cleared from the body. But also, as you have a lot of antibodies, now you're depleting complement, which is why this is a very common test that's performed when patients see their doctors 4 times a year.
Amri, I just want to say thank you for that explanation, because as a person, I have never heard it explained that way. And I appreciate that, because I think it's a way that so many people can understand without all of the huge technical terms.
You're very welcome, Christine.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate the listener-friendly explanation. Thank you so much. And we just kind of wanted to wrap it up by going back to our first question. We wanted to ask Dr. Grammer first, for someone who's interested in being an immunologist, are there any career opportunities outside of the lab that they could pursue?
Absolutely. And I mentioned in the beginning, I've always had great mentors and I've chosen to mentor others. For example, another organization that I belong to, Alpha Chi Sigma, it's a professional chemistry organization. We run a mentoring event. And what we do every other year is exactly what you're asking. There are careers in science right out of college that can be very successful. You can work in a lab, you can get a job in a pharmaceutical company, but you can also go into the business of science. You can work for a biotech company. You can work for a pharmaceutical company in a variety of fields. You can go on and get a master's degree. Data science, bioinformatics, machine learning, these are really important topics, and there's great opportunity for jobs with a master's degree or with the addition of a PhD or an MD. Often people add a law degree onto that and become a patent lawyer or go on to medical school and get involved in the job of seeing patients day by day. Just in my company, Ample Biosolutions, we're located in Charlottesville, but we have employees all over the country. We have a wide variety of degrees. Biomedical engineering is actually a great, I recommend as the top science degree to get undergrad preparation to go to medical school or any of the graduate schools that I just mentioned. Getting training, their executive MBA programs that can be done at night to learn the business or to take some time off before going to medical school to prepare you for a job future in pharma or biotech.
Thank you very much. It seems like there are a lot of opportunities in the field of immunology. And for Christine, I was just wondering, if a person wants to get involved in patient advocacy, are there any careers that they should consider specifically?
So right now it's this weird, strange time with COVID, and our healthcare system is being reimagined globally. And I think this is the perfect time for someone who's interested in patient advocacy, but really to reframe patient advocacy into something new. I like looking at patient advocacy more as citizen scientists and find out what you can do in the future, what there is. I have learned through precision medicine and through just, you know, getting out there, how to adjust things to myself and how to improve my own quality of life. And I think people need to really be proactive in that. So there are tons of opportunities coming up. Like Amri said, mentors are extremely important and finding the people that can really help you get to the right spot. But yeah, huge opportunities opening up. Not sure what they are yet because things are changing, but it's a space now where you can pretty much design your own career. So just keep educating yourself.
And I'll just follow up to that and just a little bit of insight. The way that I met Christine is actually through a nonprofit that both myself and my co-founder, Dr. Lipsky, run called Reimagine Lupus Investigation, Therapy, and Education. The only organization of its kind that brings physicians, scientists, and patients together on the same playing field to discuss important topics, everything from patient-directed education to new research breakthroughs to the involvement of physicians in both the science, clinical trials, and day-to-day management of disease. We're actually having a meeting this fall in Tucson, Arizona. We'll have about 150 people in person, more virtually. If anybody is interested in attending, they can contact the organizers of the podcast. Love to talk with you. Final thoughts, Ample, bring light to problems, a precision medicine company, product line focused on lupus to bring disease management, the right drug to the right patient at the right time, but a platform technology with the applicability to any disease right now in infectious disease and oncology. Thanks so much for your time today and really look forward to next steps.
Thank you both Dr. Grammer and Christine for your insights into how precision medicine will shape the future of both lupus treatment and diagnosis. Thank you very much and see you next time.
Thank you, it was fun.
If you liked this episode, please consider subscribing and rating our show. It really helps us out a lot. For updates on upcoming episodes or to send in questions for our guest speakers, you can follow us on Instagram at No Scrubs Podcast. That's No Scrubs with a Z. Thank you so much for listening. We hope you had as great of a time as we did.